Sit on the right hand corner.
All right.
We all set?
Yeah.
5:31, we'll call the work session to order. First item on the work session, Mr. Swedak, fence and bridge walkway.
Yep. Last year I was asked to take a look at it and it was kind of like, okay, it might need a board or two to get them fixed. And then again, this spring, I went to look at them and it's basically rotted. Now, it's been there for 20 years?
I think 20 years now. I think 2004 they did about the bridge, right, Bob? Do you get to call it? I think it was 2004.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Like they started in 2002, they completed it in 2004, I believe. So that, and the trail was one of the last pieces that they did. It is cedar. I mean, it was never stained, it was never treated. We got 20 years out of it. Cedar is kind of ridiculously expensive right now.
Oh, yeah.
I would almost say we should put pressure treated on and just keep it stained. If the board's okay with it, it is our maintenance responsibility. What we have isn't safe. Pressure treated isn't cheap either, but the highway staff, I believe,
right,
is capable of doing it.
Yeah.
The posts are fine because they're steel posts, so you're just replacing the boards between the posts.
The only thing we might want to add is spray for all the poison.
Yeah, there's poison ivy all over the Route 31 piece of it. So I just actually called a herbicide applicator today for a quote to spray the landscape beds at the highway garage. I'll ask them for a quote to spray that area for poison ivy before we send the guys out there to work.
So I don't remember if I asked this question once before, but devil's advocate, do we even need the fence?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I think you have it.
The grade is over 3-on-1. And if somebody, we would be liable if somebody fell off the trail down that ravine to the, what would be the north side of 31.
Okay.
Or down towards the water.
And again, I don't want to micromanage, but it looks like it's a 6-foot high fence.
It's their 5-foot high trail rail is what it's
5 feet. Called. Okay.
And so it's a DOT standard detail.
I believe it's 12-foot outside.
And the reason why it is that is because of the whole bike fall thing. So if you were lower than, if you're only at like a 42-inch fence, if somebody was riding a bike and hit the fence, there's potential for them to go over the fence, where if the fence is at, I think those are at 60 inches, or what are they?
I guess my only, I don't want to prolong this, but when we put the fence up on the West Shore Trail that goes on the west side of Onondaga Lake, we obviously worked with in code, and that fence, and I'm not going to swear by this, can't be any higher than 4 feet out. And it's a metal fence. It's 4 feet off the ground, and it's a bicycle, and it's deemed a bicycle trail. So I guess before we go out and put a 5-foot high fence, and I don't want, and maybe if that's the easiest thing, then go ahead and do it.
It's already there.
Yeah.
All they have.
Are the pipes metal?
Yeah, the posts are steel.
So you're just replacing the board.
All you do is replacing the board.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's already 12 feet on center.
Yeah.
You buy 12-foot.
I would just say, just replace the boards then.
All right.
Call it a day.
That's my recommendation. Is we got 20 years out of it, we're lucky.
Yeah.
It's probably
to get another 20
bucks in the lumber and some man hours.
Yeah,
sounds good.
And some herbicides to our tower.
Are you going to put this on the agenda?
So we don't have our half staff.
I think he's going to get pricing.
Right,
because we don't have.
Yeah,
and just
to bring it up to the attention. That's one of the things I'm looking at.
Just so the public understands, this is Route 31, the trail that goes down the side of Route 31, and then it goes under the bridge for biking and walking path to bring you to the south side of River Road, and that's about where the trail ends.
Yeah.
The state gifted this to us once they widened Route 31. They put the path in, but we take care of the maintenance. So. My only question was, is pressure treated good, or because I know they have the plastic.
I don't know if that would put 12 foot on center.
Because it's so wide, it would wobble. Okay.
Yeah, I would not.
Yeah.
Okay. I was just looking for something that might last longer.
Yeah.
But
I would actually, rather than, I would use 2x6 pressure treated, not 5-quarter.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't use 5-quarter. Don't use deck boards. Use a pressure treated 2x6.
Yeah.
6-inch wide board was what we were calling.
Good. Sounds good.
Okay. So you'll work on getting quotes and prices, and then we'll have a number for it. Okay. Dan, we'll be right with you. Just Ken had a couple small things. We want to get them out of the way. Next item on the agenda, Ken again, new hire, retiring MEO.
Right. So it's I have that currently now where one of the guys has retired, has physically done his last day, but has 3 or 4 weeks till the 6th of June, 11th of June for vacation to work out his time. So what I need is just looking to get an okay to, I don't know how it will work with the union, but the posting and the time frame, but being able to hire somebody sooner than the 11th of June.
You'd like to get your interview process done if possible.
Yeah, so you would have to post it anyways for what, 7 days?
Joe, you know what?
7 days.
7 days, both places.
So as long as they are.
Okay.
Right. But it'll be done before, I don't know, where if it's stated, nope, it has to be done after the last day on the books, or is it the last physical day? I don't know what that is.
You're all right.
You can hire actually. Okay. Yeah.
You have a vacant position there.
Yes.
You know, because of I think you're right.
And I guess we're looking forward to a couple more, so I just wanted to get this ironed out before
more
retirees that, you know.
I mean, me personally, I don't see why we should pigeonhole you just because a guy accrued a lot of sick time and now he's going to cash out his sick time.
Sure.
And use that when he's not physically working anymore. Yeah. Why do that?
You
got to fill a space. The body's not there. You got to fill it.
Easy enough.
That's how I feel. I don't know if anyone else, but.
Yeah. Work's got to be done.
That's good news.
They did a 6 months conditional when I was hired.
They still do that.
Oh.
Al wasn't quite gone, but I was still hired. Worked 5 months and I left
right
at 5 months instead of 6 months, and then they brought another guy in for a month to use that 6 months up.
Okay. Yeah, but I mean, as for the right, what you're saying is they brought you in before we had the formal retirement. Okay.
Yeah,
thank you,
good.
Joe.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, right. This is I think a foregone conclusion that
they had good
employees. So yeah, I don't have a problem with it. Everybody else okay?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Okay, the next item is Mr. Barnaba. To continue our discussion, I guess, on building codes in your perspective.
My input, or you're going to ask me some questions?
Oh.
You know, I would love to have your input, you know. As you know, as I was telling someone else, me personally, I like to let developers like yourself know that we're open for business, right? My idea is to let people know that, want to make sure that your job is as easy as possible and that no one at the town of Lysander is giving any developer a hard time in building anything. That's just my personal opinion, right? Because we know that with this Micron deal, there's going to be a lot of developments going on. There's
absolutely
a lot of developments going on regardless in Lysander without that. So,
absolutely.
You know.
Tony will appreciate this, and I'm going to give you my perspective. Before I got into this business, I was practicing law, and I still maintain a law license. I still practice law in Onondaga County. I was working at a law firm in Buffalo. My father passed away. I came back to town to take over a family business, and got into land development right away and found myself in front of different towns, Cicero, Clay, and now I've been in front of probably a dozen different towns. And one of the things I found interesting is that you folks don't talk to each other. That the process is different in this town than it is in this town. And heaven forbid I tell the town the way they should do business, but I have a perspective, Tony has a perspective of why not take the best of what every town is doing and try to adopt that process. But when we tell the board the way they can do things better, they get very defensive. Like, what are you telling us how to run our town for? Well, better is better. We're giving you some ideas. It'd be nice if you didn't. Because your perspective, some of you may have not been in office very long. Maybe you're new to what you're doing. And I've got now a 25-year perspective, and Tony's got a...
Don't tell
him. and he'll tell you. And I think, even in Tony's case, he doesn't want to come into representation and all of a sudden tell you all the things that you're not doing as well as you could be. He wants to go on, get on them, right? And so it's far be it from him. You know, he wants you to run your town. But those of us that have been developing in multiple towns can give you a perspective as you prepare to grow that you can take advantage of. I can tell you that when I develop land and when I build houses, there are towns that I just won't go to because it's very challenging. It's more challenging than it needs to be. And the margin of error in my line of work in making money is very small. And if a few things don't go our way, timing-wise, cost-wise, the entire project then is not viable. And you don't want to be a town with non-viable projects. That's when you end up with people cutting corners or people not doing what you'd like to have done. And you don't end up with a very good result. Now, I'll give you an example, and I'll pick on a town, and I don't know if this is broadcast or not, I don't care. I'm dealing with another town right now that's notorious for being a little onerous in the review process. It's on the east side of Onondaga County. And they haven't had a lot of projects approved over the last 20 or 30 years. DeWitt. It's tough. It's very tough to get an approval in DeWitt. Jamesville DeWitt is a very desirable school district. It's a very desirable location. It's in close to the city. You'd think, gee, if we had more housing developments out there, people would like to live out there. But it's very challenging. There's an ordinance that is adopted in state law. It's called the Cluster Reg, Section 278. It's a very valuable tool for land developers to optimize the development of a site. And when we look at your zoning and we see that we don't quite, the shapes of the lots, what's required by each of your zoning regulations doesn't quite work, we can appeal to the town board and the planning board to use clustering to make for a more efficient road layout, more efficient lot shapes. So rather than apply for a zone change, let's take advantage of this valuable tool. So I'm representing a client that by right, they can put a 60 unit apartment complex up. Now, governor would love to see 60 apartments. Town county executive would love to see 60 apartments. Micron would love to see 60 apartments. The town planning board says that's a non-starter. We don't want apartments there. And I'm saying to them, well, we're in luck because my client likes to build houses. So we're not asking for 60 apartments. We're showing you a layout with 15 townhouses. That's quite a drop in density. I told my client, hey, sell to an apartment builder. Let them deal with all the aggravation. You'll make a lot of money. But he likes to keep his staff busy. They want to build the townhouse. So they tell me right out of the gate, I need some modifications to the zoning ordinance. I said, let's use clustering. So here's what I can do without clustering, 60 apartments, one building. Here's what I can do with clustering. And they say, well, the apartments are a non-starter, but we don't like the shape of the road, and we don't like the way the townhouses look. And if you read the cluster reg, it says it's got to be for the benefit of the town, it's got to be beauty, take advantage of the natural landscape. And DeWitt's all about, they want to improve your architecture. They not only, I mean, the reason why there's not a lot of industrial and commercial development in DeWitt, because they get really into the face of these applicants and they want to look at the architecture. Now, that's a big philosophical conversation. Any of you have ever been to architecture school or learned anything about it? It's art. Architecture is art. Art and culture. I don't want my government telling me what looks good. That's what they do in some of these towns. We're putting our money on the line. We're the ones that are taking the risk, the market risk of what we build. We should have some say. I was literally talking to one of the planning board members recently. He said, well, we want it to look good. Well, why do you get to decide? What's your credentials for deciding what looks good? So when we're coming to you with a plan, there's a lot of foresight into the product we want to build, the shape of the road that we want to put in, the nature of the layout, so that we can be successful. And that's something I would share with your planning board, with your town board, that we feel like we don't get a lot of deference. More often than not, we just have to take the path of least resistance. Just like, look, I'm stuck with this project. I gotta get it going. I fought with the town of Clay a decade and a half ago. Beautiful project off Morgan Road. I think your parents looked at it, the hamlet.
I looked at it, too. Yeah.
Beautiful community. I wanted 46 lots, and we were really fighting over the density. With the clustering, you have to show them how many houses you could build. Mm-hmm. I showed them a layout of 46, had some driveways on an arterial road. They said, well, those lots don't count in your density study because you can't build that. Why do you care? Why do you care? I ended up fighting with them. Instead of 46 units, I got 36 units. There's now, none of the planning board members are even on the board anymore. And if you drive by that neighborhood today, nobody remembers how many houses are in there but me. So why do they care over 10 units? Other than somehow they got it in their head that they're doing their job as a service provider to the residents to limit the volume. Where did that come from? Is there some type of sense of satisfaction when the developer comes in and asks for this and he gets this and you say, look, we did our job. We knocked down the unit count by 10. That ain't gonna work in the days of my prime. Once you decide a piece is suitable for residential housing development, you gotta maximize the number of units that you put in there, because there's gonna come a day where the last permit is pulled on that piece and you gotta go get the next one. And it's hard to find a Radisson where you're gonna get 3,500 housing units, or a Village Green where you're gonna get, you know, 600 housing units. It's tough to do that. So I would focus on trying to optimize. It should be a win-win, you know. If you can maximize the number of houses and taxpayers per mile of road you have to plow, I would think that would be a benefit.
Dan, I hear you. And I would argue that there is a role for government to play in terms of the look of their community in the long term and aesthetics. And I'm hoping that there's always going to be room for compromise and negotiation. But if you ever try to convince me that the Route 31 corridor going to Cicero is a beautiful thing to look at, you'll have a tough time doing that. Because I compare that to what Radisson looks like, or a lot of the developments in Lysander that are not as whatever you want to call Radisson. And I do think there's a role to be played in terms of what do we want this town to look like, and maybe it was an accident. I don't know. I wasn't here. You weren't either. But the development that took place from the four corners of Beeville out, let's say, a mile, the village, that's a beautiful village, a beautiful village with stately homes, some of them, and it looks good. Is there one way to do it as opposed to no other way? Of course not, and that's why you negotiate. But I'm throwing that out because while I'm on this board, I'm going to insist that we take into account the aesthetics of a development.
That's where I'm confused. Can you be more specific as far as what the problem with the Route 31 corridor is? Because the only problem that's evident to me is there could have been a lot more thought behind the traffic control and how many lanes of traffic. Are you saying the monuments associated with the buildings and their structures were not very thoughtfully done?
I'm saying there's more to development than just providing the maximum number of houses for people to live in.
If I said the word maximum, I misspoke.
That's what you hinted
at. What I mean is optimum. Okay. And you know, we only have so much land to go around. So I'll give you a gross example in the town. The grossest example I can give you in the town of Clay. In 2004, 2005, I closed on 187 acres. It's our wildflower community. It's about a mile north of Route 31, and it's just north of Verplank Road. So it's at the intersection of Verplank Road and Henry Clay Boulevard. It's literally about a half a mile from the Oak Orchard Treatment Plant. And in 1990, the county government came up with a plan, big plan, a 2010 plan. They were going to show you 20 years forecasting how they'd like to see growth. And they wanted that growth to be in their sanitation districts. Those are where their sewers are supposed to service. So I bought a piece of property without a zone change in a sanitation district. I said, well, that's where the county wants the sewers. I'm a half a mile from the plant. So I buy the piece. It's zoned agricultural. In the town of Clay, agricultural means you get 100,000 square foot lots. So I apply for a zone change to R15. Not going to happen, because they did a northern land use study. They didn't want any development north of Route 31. They wanted to preserve the rural character of the town of Quay, and no development north of Route 31. Until CORE came along, and CORE decided, well, we want to put about 600 apartment buildings and townhouses in that area called River's Edge Apartments. So they arbitrarily moved the line to Verplank Road. They said, well, we'll allow some density north of 31 now, but not north of Verplank Road. So after fighting with them for a decade, we put 41 houses on 187 acres. Now, admittedly, I've got some wetland in there, but usable acreage, probably 110, 120 acres. We have 41 houses on 120 acres. 2 miles to the east is Micron, half a mile to the west is the sewage treatment plant. What would that land be worth today?
Did you have to run sewers? I'm just asking. Given the lots, they're septic right now, right?
Every house is a septic system.
Right.
There's 41 houses over there. They're all on septic systems. And that's because the board that was in place thought they had foresight, and they didn't quite have the foresight that they thought they did, that they're going to get a Micron in there, and they're going to have to service all that with houses. And it was just tragic that land was squandered. Beautiful homes. We're just finishing up the project. You have $600,000, $700,000, $800,000 homes over there. Not necessarily what the market needs now.
Right. And that's, I think you brought up an excellent point. You know, we have home rule in the towns to decide how our towns are going to be through planning, through land use, through comprehensive plans. And the difficulty with that is you have the county at a level doing their own studies, not communicating with the town levels, and the county puts out something saying, oh, we're looking for this. But inside those individual towns, they might not be looking for that. And I understand the frustration as a developer that you don't have one general rule by county, because that would make it easy. But at the same point in time, the way the state laws are, that haven't changed, probably not going to change, because you'd have a bunch of municipalities upset. They lose their voice. And, you know, that the planning, you know, the town board sort of sets the path. They make the rules. The planning board goes by those rules. And the planning board gets the caveat of the character. And I can drive in other towns that I think are horrendous. I can drive over in the commercial side of Clay right now on 31. Thank God they're finally repaving those roads. I don't know if they're paving Great Northern Mall yet, but they're finally doing the ones around Walmart and Wegmans. And, you know, that's a pet peeve to me, to go into a business, I have to go get groceries, and I'm driving through streets that look like they just got carpet bombed because they're a private entity or they're not town-owned and nobody's taking care of them. You know, heaven forbid people go over to BJ's with what that debacle is. You're driving through the parking lot because the road's useless. And I don't like that part, but that's what Clay decided was, oh, you know, the feeder streets, they're all going to be taken care of by the commercial entities, which are great when business is good and they have the money to repair them, and you can go after somebody that has the pockets to take care of them. Lysander is odd. With Radisson being here, you know, Radisson was supposed to be self-sufficient and its own thing 50 years ago. So we're going to vote tonight. It's their 50th anniversary. That didn't pan out after 10 years. You know, the town took over. That, you know, now they're in the town, so it falls on the schooling. And then you go back to like the 2010 plan, where the county didn't. They wanted to infill. You got septic and sewer. You know, we're not extending the sewer until somebody big enough comes along, and they'll extend the sewer, or they'll extend the sewer to get somebody big enough. Well, 20 years from now, we can argue if that was a great idea or not when we see where Micron ends up. But in our town, I like the part that you have different developments. And, you know, developers can choose what they think the 50 acres should look like. And the planning board can sit there, given the rules they have and the leeway they have, to decide what the character of that individual neighborhood can be. And I do like the fact that we can decide the looks of it. You know, that I do like the home rule part of that, because I wouldn't necessarily want to drive down to 31 in Lysander where you've got these huge, you know, block front buildings, and I know we don't have a commercial area of that size like Clay, but I think our different neighborhoods are pretty much communities. You know, where you live is, it's like its own community.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, you know, Lysander is just a bedroom community. That's all we are, you know, and you know that, you know.
When I'm referring to the look, I'm talking about single family homes.
Yeah.
I get it, you don't want a bunch of pole barns for your industrial buildings and stuff like that. And I don't navigate in that area of site plan approval for signage and commercial structures and things like that. So I think we can agree that objectively we can look at something that maybe looks appealing and what doesn't. But when I'm building single family homes, just dealing with what I have to go through with Radisson sometimes can be a challenge. And they put a lot of architectural control there. But you know that when you buy the property going
right
in.
You know it going, it doesn't change on you halfway through the process.
We like to deal in terms of units per acre. So if you do the math over Wildflower, right, to get 41 units on 187 acres, obviously it would be hard to fathom that being efficient. I mean, the amount of road that they're plowing just to service 41 homes.
Right.
We're about to start a new project in Salina. We're getting close to 5 units per acre. And that's going to be unique. And in addition, we're going to build a product that I don't think has been built in 80 years in Onondaga County or the city. We're going to build some two-family homes. Now, when I tell townships I'm going to build two-family homes, the first thing they think of is, you mean that shit I see in the village or I see in the city that's all dilapidated? But what I remember is what the Italian families used growing up on the north side, and the grandparents owned the home, and the parents got married, they lived upstairs, and then the next generation lived in the home while they were raising money to get started. Well, we see a market right now for empty nesters that have an aging parent, empty nesters that have a child that's going to be at home, young couples that the only way they're going to afford that mortgage payment is if they can rent out part of the house, or young couples that might want to run a business out of the extra square footage. Maybe they do tax prep or accounting or something like that. Just so happens the piece we bought is already zoned to allow two family. I'm wondering if I walked into some of these towns and said, hey, I'd like to build two family houses, how that would go over.
I love it.
Sounds like there's a market for it, doesn't it?
Well, that's, I mean, that's where we're at in this community also. We're at the changing time of who owned a house and who can afford to own a house. You know, when I went to the county planning symposium, and I've been in talks trying to get the county, I'd like to see a presentation from the county again, or the consultant they had do the study on affordability of houses and what the numbers are right now to, you know, what you can afford in Onondaga County as opposed to what you can afford and where you would end up living based on what you can afford. And there's a huge variance right now. I mean, me, if I was a single person on my income as town supervisor, there's no way I could ever afford to buy a house. If I wanted to build a new house in the town of Lysander, never gonna happen.
That will. You didn't even afford to rent.
Right. Right.
So the units we're designing, they're about 2,000 square feet. The primary residence is 1,400 square feet. The rented residence is about 600 or 700 square feet. So these are small spaces. And the same thought process is involved in auxiliary dwelling units. So if I look at the Wildflower piece where everybody owns an acre, if they wanted to build a detached garage on their property and have rentable space above it, now you're doubling up the number of residences that you have in the same neighborhood. You don't have to put any more town road in. The owner will build the structure and have the rentable space, and now you've got maybe 41 Micron employees living in these auxiliary dwelling units. I don't know how many towns have bought into that concept.
Well, I think most towns have been, you know, we're waiting to see where the numbers end up. And finally, you know, 2 weeks ago, we had the announcement of Now it's more of a reality. And but I still feel that the county-town disconnect, there's got to be some way of communication between the county and the towns, because not every town wants to do that. Not every town has that capacity. You know, the town of Lysander, we're limited by sewer and water, and it's because of Three Rivers Wildlife. I mean, getting to the northwest corner of Lysander would take coming from Oswego County, the way our town's laid out. There's water at the edge of Oswego County. It's aqua water. We all know it. It depends on when the county decides what way they're going with it. If they wanted to extend it or put some water towers out there, and we wouldn't have a say in the world on it. And that would change the demographic of northwest corner. But the northwest corner, for all intent and purposes right now, there's no affordable way to build it. You know, in a couple of weeks, we're going to have a sewer study come out that's just going to be jaw-dropping at what the cost
will be. Surprised. I'm just vaguely remembering this. You're too young to remember this. Village Green was built without the treatment plant. The developer built the sewage treatment plant. So the type of growth you're talking about now is somebody going out and buying 1,000 acres, maybe in the middle of Lysander, and building their own sewage treatment plant. And then you get all the houses taking advantage of the sewage treatment plant, and then they negotiate and sell the plant back to the municipality, which is wasn't a very pleasant negotiation with the Village Green treatment plant. I think there was a big lawsuit involved or something like that. But eventually the county took that treatment plant over from the private developer. You must remember that, Tony, don't you?
That was before me. Before
Wow.
Me.
Well, I meant as being an attorney for a town or a municipality, because he's been in that position a long time.
That happens where the growth is that robust that you can't wait for the county to build the treatment plant. The developer has the resources to build, and the technology is becoming more and more available on things like this. We happen to have a stodgy county health department. They are slow to accept innovation, but the innovation for smaller treatment plants and things like that is out there. They just had some bad experiences, like Whispering Oaks in your town.
Right. Well, that wasn't really a treatment plant. That was a big septic tank.
And you know, Lysander hasn't done everything right. I mean, for 2 decades, weren't developers putting dry sewers in that have never been used? And who knows what kind of condition they're in now?
They're pretty good. Honestly, you tell by some of them. They don't leak that bad. So they're pretty good.
Your job is way too exciting for me.
Yeah. Sewer videos.
You gotta put those up on YouTube now.
Snorefest. So I'll say this.
Okay.
An example of a treatment plant that just like Dan said, Radisson had its own treatment. When Radisson was first developed, Radisson had its own treatment plant. It's over where the Belgium County Belgium pump station is right now. So that was a wastewater treatment facility that outfalled to the river. And the county, I don't know how it all worked out, but essentially when the county updated the Consolidated Sewer District, the county and Bill Baldwinsville, Seneca Knowles, they built that with the intent of replacing the Radisson wastewater treatment plant with a pump station to pump to Baldwinsville, Seneca Knowles. And the only reason the state built the Radisson treatment plant was because the county did not have a facility on this side of the river to treat waste. And it was the same thing with Seneca Knowles, same era, approximately, where the county, I do believe you're right, the owner of that treatment plant sued the county and said, you need to provide access to the because the county consolidated sewer district was there, you need to provide a wastewater disposal service for us because we're included in this district.
I think it was the Capsilis that did that. And I don't know the economics behind plants and districts and stuff, but you go to places like Florida where these big housing developments are done, and ultimately, the municipalities want to own them because they become profit centers. The fees they're charging, the district fees, are more than adequate to cover the actual maintenance cost of the facilities.
So
they're not profitable until they're all in use.
Right.
So if they're going to service 2 2,000 homes, you got to get all the 2,000 homes contributing.
And it's not the wastewater treatment. So the way special districts are set up in New York, there is no profit from it. However, the growth in the assessment roll from new houses coming on supports the town economically. The fee for the special district can be no more than what the cost of maintaining the special district is in future planning for upgrades of that special district. So we're limited in how much. Villages are a little different. Village sewer and water fees can be distributed as the village sees fits, but in towns, we're very limited in how much profit we can take. However, if you didn't have any growth and your tax roll stayed essentially sedimentary, what growth has allowed Lysander to do is keep, you know, we haven't expanded, we haven't grown services with new growth, but our assessment roll has grown, which has allowed us to keep a very low, stable tax rate. And what was sustainable, you know, 10 years ago when we had inflation rates of 0.5%, 1%, well, the reality of it is that isn't what inflation rates are now. And you know, when you're looking at inflation rates, what, 2022, the inflation rate was 9% or something, 8.5%, whatever it was. Last year it was 7%. And we've had some growth, but we haven't had significant growth. We're going to be in a position where we're going to have to push taxes up a little bit to make up for the inflation rate not keeping up with the growth of the assessment roll in the next couple of years. We've been able to avoid that through fund balance use and whatnot for the past 2 years, but if we continue to see inflation for the next 5-6 years that is in that 3-6% range, well, that's not going to be a reality anymore. And Micron may help us get through that hard time so that the existing residents don't see a big increase in town taxes. Just because Micron is going to spur the demand for residential housing in commercial and industrial development.
What's the capacity of the treatment plant?
I'll say this, the capacity of the treatment plant is, right now, it is at about 60%. So it's about 60% of
our rainy day.
What's that?
How much infiltration, water infiltration is there?
From a flow standpoint, we're at like 30%. The BOD, the actual load, the strength of the waste, is our more limiting factor in the Baldwinsville-Seneca Knolls treatment. Not to say that there isn't sewers in the village that need to be lined and knock out some of that infiltration, because we do see a big spike in inflow and infiltration during wet weather periods in the village of Baldwinsville. But the sewers in Van Buren and Lysander are all relatively new. They're mostly the only area in the town that we have old clay tile sewers, which are notoriously leaky, is Indian Springs, and those have been slip lined now. So we have relatively, like, we don't see big spikes in flows at our pump station during wet weather. Yeah, we see slight increases, but it's marginal. You'll see 5-10% increase in flow during wet weather periods compared to dry weather periods.
I mean, most of what is west of here is still uphill of the treatment plant. So you'd extend the capacity of that plant before you build a new one.
Oh, absolutely. And so Baldwinsville-Seneca Knolls is a sister plant to Old Orchard. And as you know, in 2009, I think it was, when Joni Mahoney was in office, maybe it was 2012. Either way, she said, Oak Orchard is at its capacity, no new development, Clay. You're not gonna have any new hookups into Oak Orchard treatment plant. And through political pressure, eventually the WEF did a study, or a consultant did a study, to increase the design loading of the Oak Orchard treatment plant without upgrading. They just had to do a study and show that the plant functions better than what the design intended it to. And instead of being able to handle 30 million gallons a day, it can handle 40 million gallons a day. And instead of being able to handle 15,000 pounds of BOD a day, it can handle 22,000 pounds of BOD a day. And the county needs to commission that same study for our Baldensville Seneca Knowles treatment plant.
Assuming there's going to be money available to evaluate your infrastructure, mm-hmm. whose job is it in the town of Lysander to go get that?
So we just did a Cold Spring sewer study that will allow, because you have to do a design study before you can apply for all these grant funding opportunities. So we just completed that. We're going to roll it out. I'll email it to the board probably tomorrow or Monday, and we're going to talk about it in work session in 2 weeks. You're more than welcome to attend. Love to have you hear it, and love you to have you weigh in because you understand this. And then we'll probably do a public presentation of that study in the next month, 6 weeks, something like that.
You're trying to refine the numbers so you have a better idea where your current limits are.
Correct. And what our costs are going to be to sewer the Cold Springs Peninsula. With development, without development, with development at 2 units an acre, with development at 4 units an acre.
But it's just math. Once you commission your new study, you should be able to figure out how many more units you could support.
Correct.
I'm curious what that number would be.
Well, we're not looking at the county treatment plant, because that's the county's responsibility, and the county has said that they will do what they need to do to accommodate growth. And
They should share that number with you, because all the development that goes in, all the sewage that goes into that plan is from your town.
No, Van Buren, and Van Buren parks.
I'm referring to the Baldensville schools.
Yep.
We should be getting that sewer study back pretty soon, right?
Yeah, I just said I'm gonna email it to you guys either tomorrow or Monday. Okay. There's a couple little things they had them tweaking, but yeah, we'll email it to the board, and then I think we should talk about it at work session next meeting, and then do a public presentation. I'll say it on record: you're over $35 million in sewer infrastructure to sewer the Cold Springs Peninsula. It's a lot of money.
I feel like a lot of money is going to be available for your municipalities to support Micron's growth, and you've got to, I don't know who handles that, if you subcontracted out to your engineering firm, but somebody's got to look into getting this stuff so you can plan for where your growth is going to be. We go where it's easiest for us to get what we need.
Is Lysander easy for you to work in?
Yes. So your town engineer's very easy to work with, very responsive. Karen Rice, I don't know who you have in mind for her replacement.
No, but if you know, I don't want anyone to listen.
she's very responsive, easy to work with. Your code enforcement office has been, I think they know who to look at closely and who not. So I'll say that as a builder who wouldn't cut a corner and would do what is asked of us, they give us a lot of latitude. Most of my experience in the town of Lysander is in Radisson.
Right.
And I found because that was all approved well in advance, it was very easy to get what I needed. I'm a little concerned about this idea that if I see 100 acres over here and I need a zone change, I have to pay for it. That seems odd. You think housing is good there? I think housing is good there. Why do I have to pay for the zone change?
It's not a zone change. It's a negotiation.
Again, but the idea is for us to create, you want housing, you want to offset inflation.
Well, I don't know if we want housing. I wouldn't jump down. But I also don't want to determine an individual's right that owns property, what they can do with it. Anybody can come to us and ask for a zone change, and that's up to the people on the board to determine.
I'm talking about the transfer of development rights.
Oh, incentive zoning?
Yeah, that's what he's
saying. Because we haven't seen many developers that'll say, oh, I'll build a sewer treatment plant for you when I build this too, because we got a bad taste in our mouth on Whispering Oaks, and the town was left holding the...
If this piece is ideal for residential, you don't want commercial, you don't want industrial there, I'd rather see you impose your concerns about the way the site is going to look as opposed to just some type of flat cash payment.
So we're limited in the tools that we have by what New York State Town Law says. As you know, UCs impact fees in New York State are not allowed. Incentive zoning is allowed. Incentive zoning gives us a tool to say, hey, Mr. Developer, boy, we see some traffic issues coming.
coming up at this intersection. And while you may not be the only person that's developing, we would rather see the traffic issue addressed. And we need a turn lane here, we need a traffic signal here, because we know we're gonna have growth elsewhere in the town, and you want higher density. So this is a way to help pay for that. Hey, we need a pump station here, and this pump station is not only going to benefit your development, this pump station is going to benefit Palmer School. This pump station is going to serve the existing residents on Hicks Road, on Patchett Road, on River Road. It's going to benefit existing residents. And the bottom line is, we got to put like 35,000 feet of gravity sewer in the ground. Boy, if we can get the developers to pay for pump stations that will serve that 35,000 feet of gravity sewer we got to put in the ground to serve the existing residents on the Cold Springs Peninsula.
When you ask for the developer to pay for it, you give the developer 100 lots, you're really asking for 100 homeowners to pay for it.
Absolutely.
If you're trying to benefit the town, put it in a consolidated district and have it spread over the entire town. Have the taxpayer pay for it. I know you hate the idea of raising taxes, but it's...
The homeowner becomes a taxpayer, so your point's sort of moot. The same point in time, for a $400, $500 item, or maybe a $2,000 item, is probably a lot easier to take. I don't think anybody walked away from a house because it was $452, did they? And not $450? So that's where I feel on that end of it. I don't see anybody walking away from the house of their dreams for one more three quarters of a month mortgage payment. So that's where I'm at on
that. That's an easy way to pass $2,000 across the table, but if you spread it over your entire town, you're asking everybody to pay $10. You can't do
right,
that
but the other part of incentive zoning is, at 500 units, we need a traffic light that costs $1 million. And I've watched it. So you can't say it doesn't happen. Developer comes in, 100, 100, oh, then it'll be 50. Nobody's going to hit that 500 number because they don't want to be the one to pay for the light. So that's the other end of it. Whereas if we do incentive zoning and we know the needs of that area and we spread it around against each guy who decides to develop the town, because the alternative is it stays farmland. Nobody's upset that it stays farmland.
We're not that far apart.
Maybe the developer's not.
Let the developer go to R8 from R agricultural to R15, but then if he wants additional density, then it might kick in. You know, agricultural zoning is just a holding zoning for all the farms that haven't been developed yet. And so you say that's a place you'd like residential. Okay, we'll get you to R15. We're inclined to give you extra density if you're willing to pay for it. And I bet you most developers at that point would say, wow, I'm going to get 50 more units. What do you have in mind?
So Dan, here's the deal. Anybody can develop it inside.
I got two of you. I'll let them finish up in a couple minutes.
All right, thank you.
Here's the deal. Anybody can develop an incentive zoning piece and not do incentive zoning and request clustering. Any developer can do that.
Yeah, but you're limited to the density of the underlying zone.
Which is R40. So you can go to 20,000 square foot lots. So there is, if you don't want to go through the negotiation process, there's no incentive for the town to approve that necessarily. But it is an option. It probably shoots the developer in the foot too, because the developer will end up losing in the end anyway. I mean, when residential building lots are selling for $70,000, geez, you lose 10 lots or 15 lots, and that's $1 million on 15 lots. None of the incentive zoning that we approved cost the developer $1 million. And I don't necessarily see that. Really, the incentive zone, the way that's laid out, is each person that develops an incentive zoning parcel is going to pay for a pump station that's going to transfer waste from the rest of the existing residents of the Cold Springs Peninsula to the wastewater treatment plant. And it's going to keep those residents from having to bond for that. With that being said, the new residents that come in will be included in that overlying sewer district, and those new residents are going to help pay for the bond that the town has to take to build the gravity sewers that connects the rest of the existing residents to the new development. So there's a benefit to
not only the developer, but also to everybody else that's paying that bond, and that you're going to have more units paying towards that bond. Therefore, everybody pays a lower monthly or lower annual fee towards that debt service. So there's benefits to both existing residents, the builder, and new residents, in that the new residents have more people that share the cost of maintaining that pump station annually.
Al, I'm just going to, we got a couple of people with questions. So Mrs. Rode, or
that's Stevens. Kevin's mother, if you haven't figured that out yet.
First of all, no disrespect to the builders, but this town board here is for their main purpose is to honor the taxpayers, what the taxpayers want out of their town. Do we want building? Yes. Do we want overbuilding? No. We want it to be, try to maintain what this village and town has been for years. And you can do that with building and a little pocket building like we've done. But just because my friend's coming, I don't want to see overbuilding in this town, and I'm sure nobody else than the taxpayer in this town wants to see all, every inch of land built on.
Ma'am, I grew up in Baldwinsville, graduated from Baldwinsville, and I paid more money in taxes to the town of Lysander than you have.
Oh,
so I'm a taxpayer.
But that doesn't matter. I mean,
my point is, she's speaking on behalf of the taxpayer. I'm a taxpayer.
Right. I was born in the town of Lysander.
I hear you.
So I've been here more than
years. Her grandfather created the first comprehensive land use plan, so there's a little bit to do with
sometimes, that. Right. Sometimes the resident taxpayer fails to recognize that the developer is also a taxpayer.
Oh, I do. I understand that, but I'm saying that you have to think about what the taxpayers. To me, that's the number one thing.
Landowners have property rights, and
right.
We despise when our neighbor tells us what we can't. You despise if I can tell you what you can do with your property. We despise when somebody tells us when we can't. We just want to follow the rules. You have the
right.
Rules. I'm not asking for anything that your rules don't allow.
I'm just right. Saying I don't think anybody that they want the majority of the taxpayers in the town want to see overbuilding. We understand you got to have building and you've got to go forward, but where is the line?
I think the line was crossed 20 years ago.
Mike Ron, just because Mike Ron's coming doesn't mean we need to go over every inch of land and say, well, this can be built on, this can be built on. That's what I'm saying. I'm for building. And as far as Al's remark about not keeping up with inflation with the new building, you counter that because the town of Lysander can reassess. I paid $100,000 over what my house is assessed for, but they froze assessments, so yay for me, I'm saving money. You know, so they always have that option to go back and reassess. And when they reassess, you're going to really increase your assessment roll, which will make your taxes change. So you can keep up with inflation by assessing, reassessing. So, I'm just saying that to me, the town board, their priority should be what the taxpayers are. And if that means holding some kind of a forum and having taxpayers come and say, you know, I think we should leave, you know, 25% of the town or whatever, unbuildable, you know, have some space. I grew up, like I said, where we had lots of space, and there were farms, yes. The farmer doesn't exist anymore, it's not profitable. But I still think that they're trying to take into consideration what the average taxpayer wants.
That shot's already gone out the gut.
Yeah.
40 years ago, we gave up on economic enthusiasm around here. Businesses left, and we have 40 years of people leaving our region. Kids graduated, they went someplace else. We've had no population growth. The only economic enthusiasm we've had in 20 years is let's build a mall. That's pretty sad. We've averaged 400 to 500 building permits for the last 15 years in Onondaga County. To meet the housing demands of Micron, you need 20, they're saying we need 2,500 permits a year for the next 20 years. Five times our current capacity. This is a desirable place to live. Either you come up with a plan and you say we want people to live here, or you say, you know what, we like it just the way it is. We love it, we don't want you here.
Right.
That's pretty sad.
Mr. Schmidt.
Growth is coming. Now's
right.
Your chance
yeah.
To identify where you want.
Yes.
And we have done that with the zoning
part. Right. Sorry.
Thank
yes.
you. I guess I would back out from taxpayers and say the voters. I think early on in your pitch, you talked about the appropriate role of government and some of the things you wanted to do and some of the things they were asking you to do as well, particularly, I think, aesthetics and architecture, for example. But the argument is the appropriate role of government is often to bridge competing interests in this area. And so it's not the taxpayers, but the voters, right, taxpayer or not, that elects a board, and a board appoints a zoning that has to balance these interests. And let's not pretend that these interests collide. And they could collide everywhere. And the big growing places, I mean, you think Dwight's nasty here, you've probably seen, if you ever watch a town meeting in Bethesda, Maryland, if someone wants to build a two-family home, right? That gets ugly, because they love their single-family houses in an area that's way short of housing in the DC metro. And it's a nifty fest, right? But there's an inherent conflict between existing homeowners who have a single family home with half acre to two-thirds of an acre lot where I'm not right next to my neighbors, right? I lived in an apartment. I did my time. It sucked. I could afford something better. I got something better. And what I got better is not to have to hear my neighbors fight about whose turn it was to do the dishes, right? So maybe they're fighting next door. I can't hear it, and that's the life. But my argument here is there are these competing interests that come in. And you come into development and you come into growth, but you have existing homeowners, and a representative elective government and a functioning democracy has to bridge those. And the reality of the fight here is there's what we call these negative externalities, right? Growth brings things that I'm not born in this area, right? We are a transplant to this area. It's our adopted home. And it is striking to your adopted home how down people are, because you think you move in this area and it's like it's God's country. It is so unbelievably beautiful. And it was affordable in 1997. And it was a beautiful place to raise a family because the schools are good. And you know, there's so much fresh water and all of these things that you want. And how could these people possibly sit down on it? So economics is my trade. We're looking at the single best piece of economic news since I moved here in 1995. No doubt about it. But we have to bridge these different interests. And an elected government is the way we bridge these interests, right? You're right, I can't tell a farmer what to do with the land, but when I drive down Route 370 to my home, and I see that giant vista across from Abbott's farm, you know, it's beautiful. I know I don't have the right to stop it, but I'm sad that I'm going to lose it. Because I think I probably am. I think that's what that housing development looks like, its density, whether the sewer gravities its way to my house. You know, keep it in mind. Keep in mind. But, you know, those things remain to be seen. But I think, you know, you early mentioned the role of government, and I understand this is exactly the role of government. Have to bridge these interests by people elected by the voters, not just taxpayers, but the voters.
Thank you.
40 years ago, I moved to Baltonsville. I was one of the early occupants in Radisson. And we were the kids that went to school. They're like, when we went to school, the village dwellers, the farmers in Baltonsville, thought we were ruining the community. I can't believe that what's going on in Radisson. Why would you want to live there with all those roles? And here it is 40 years later, and that's a signature part of your town and Onondaga County. If you could pick that up and do two more of those, I think that's a good thing.
Yeah. No.
You always get the perception of the people that are there now, NIMBYs, right? We all heard that word. And that's what a lot of people become. They don't want it in their backyard, but let alone, they were there too, right? They didn't want their, people didn't want their house to be built, but it got built, and now they become the NIMBYs, you know? Not saying anyone in the audience is a NIMBY. I'm just saying, you know,
these homes that were built.
What car do you drive? Just so they know.
Close to $300 a square foot.
It's absurd. Okay.
So these homes are going to bring all the other home values up, all the existing home values up.
Yeah.
The reality of it is, I'm going to say this, and I think this is a good note to close on. From the county planning synopsis, entry. What's the income level that's required for entry into the housing market in Lysine. Household income over $200,000 right now is entry level into existing housing in the town of Lysine. What percentage of the community has that income level? And we'll leave it at that, because it is not a large percentage. And without some density, and the reason that is that number is so high is because we have large homes on large house lots that are existing
that sell for a lot of money. And we're an engine community.
Right. We'll leave it at that. We're time for our meeting.
I don't have an evil plan for the town of Blythe. I've got 12 lots left. I'm trying to figure out where I'm going to build next. I hope I get to build in my hometown.
Thank you. I'm sure we'll have more discussions on this.
Yeah.
I'm going to end the work session at 6:30.